You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The California primary is fast approaching. Mail-in voting begins in a couple weeks. With Representative Eric Swalwell ending his campaign, 9 candidates remain in the crowded race for governor, and we're looking to interview all of them. We're kicking off our series of interviews today with former state controller Betty Yee. She was the state's top financial officer during both Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom's administrations from 2015 to 2023. The Democratic candidate joined us in studio on Friday to talk about why she's running to be the next governor of California. Former Controller Yee, thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Thank you, Vicky. It's always a pleasure to be in the studio.
So you have a long career in state public office, dating back to Governor Gray Davis as his budget director, to the State Board of Equalization, overseeing like property taxes, and then, of course, as California's state controller, acting as the chief fiscal officer, like the state's accountant. What drew you to a career that revolves around money and funding?
Well, really, my family business. My parents are both immigrants from China, and they started a laundry and dry cleaning business. And with any family business, particularly with immigrant parents who don't speak English, the children are the best employees. And so I took care of the books for the business at the young age of 8. It was very rudimentary. I followed how much we took in every week and how much we paid out and what we earned every week. But it just gave me a very good insight into the role of numbers and finance.
Mm. I guess, what did that teach you at the state level?
You know, it taught me that, you really have to be accountable. You have to really know, where your dollars are going and really understand that there are ways that you can't control some of the things that are going to affect how much you're paying for things. And so just being mindful and being anticipatory of, things that could come and upset your, financial condition.
So you termed out as controller back in 2023. You stepped away from public office.
Yes.
Did you know back then that you wanted to run for governor once Governor Newsom terms out?
I had had a thought about it. I did not decide right away. I wanted to have some time away just to be sure that that was the decision I was going to commit to. And I did have some time away. And really what influenced me was caring for my elderly mother and really realizing that this whole idea of our population becoming older and the care needs would become greater was going to be an economic issue that we would have to contend with. And so that's really been the basis of my work, is just looking at how we can plan for economic vulnerabilities for Californians and hopefully have the supports that are developed for them to be able to weather those.
Why is being governor the best role to tackle an issue like that, for example?
I think it's, for me, the governor being the chief executive officer really has the unique opportunity to set the tone of accountability, for sure, with the legislature, with his own executive branch, but also just the statewide influence you can have. So this is not about, and I've been a statewide officer, but certainly in terms of public policy that is going to be inclusive of all of our regions of the state, there is a way, I think, to govern in a diverse state like California, where we can be much more granular about what each of the regions have to offer. We live in a wonderful state. I've traveled it extensively. There are unique attributes to every region. The people are just as diverse. But the immense talent that we have here in California and how we can put it to work to really deal with some of the issues and challenges that are facing us, I think there's just so much promise in terms of what we could do. And I think having that vision from the top that then is about how you govern with accountability and also just with, just the experience of working with the state's finances can really put us in a good position.
You were state controller during the time of both Governor Brown and, of course, Governor Newsom.
Yes.
How do you view Governor Newsom's 2 terms in office? Is there anything you would do differently?
I think Governor Newsom has been a good governor. I particularly give him high marks during the pandemic. He was a very visible governor. He put forth a lot of public information, and I felt just really kept the people of California well informed in terms of what was happening. It was a challenging time, and I think everyone just wanted to figure out how to cope. People lost jobs, and so it was a very challenging time. But I appreciated his just being present every single day with information, and also with assistance. I would say that where I believe he's fallen short is just really about now, governing for California. This is a time when that's quite fraught with looming healthcare cuts coming from the federal government, looking at how people are really trying to live through a huge affordability crisis that we have here in California. And I just think that this is a time where we need to lean in and really build our strength with how we are going to lift up communities as the antidote to fight back against Trump's target towards California.
I'm happy you brought that up because California is the fourth largest economy in the world, a ranking that is regularly celebrated by the governor, yes. other elected officials. But the everyday Californian doesn't necessarily feel that benefit. The cost of living is a heavy burden for so many people. And you've been a leader with the state's finances for the better part of two decades. Why should voters choose you if they don't agree with the fiscal priorities and the direction of the state?
Well, I think this is what it's about. It's how do we set a new direction to where we can live up to the ambition of being a large global economy that rests on the economic health of each Californian. And by that, I mean, you know, where can we make investments that actually do help Californians be able to share in this economic prosperity? And I want to just frame this, Vicky, because California is experiencing a widening wealth gap. And that's really the context within which I speak about everything. It's been hitting our brown and black households much more significantly, but it's also encroaching upon the middle class. You know, when you approach, you know, looking at how you solve a wealth gap, and I'm not sure that we're going to close it altogether, we look at how do we create opportunities for people to earn more and then be able to look at how they can start creating wealth. And also look, how do we look at really having those supports that are going to help them be able to be in the workforce to look for those opportunities to earn more. So the cost of healthcare, the cost of childcare, those kinds of things that are going to have to be investments and they're going to have to be subsidized. But I think the return in terms of what we will get relative to economic benefit will be able to pay for all that.
I mean, affordability is a kitchen table word that is used across, you know, households across the state. Even state lawmakers made it a top priority last legislative session. You know, but I don't think a lot of people think a lot is being done to benefit their lives directly. What could you do in your first year in office that would actually make California feel more affordable to Californians?
Sure. Look, there are today, I mean, we're sitting here on top of, you know, a war that is causing oil prices to go up. And so the cost of gas here in California, housing, probably the biggest issue in terms of affordability. What I like to do, certainly in my first term, is to be sure that we do everything we can to prevent people from becoming unhoused, that we have some stability with respect to their ability to stay in their homes or to be in a stable housing environment. So we will do that. I want to be sure to acknowledge the renters in the state, but definitely want to look at whether we need rent subsidies to keep people stable in their homes. We don't want a lot of churning in communities where people are, you know, just not able to afford to be there, and then you know, people leaving. And then we need to accelerate with urgency putting new housing supply in place. And by this, I mean really working with our local jurisdictions. How can we really get through these approval processes? And then the other thing we haven't thought about, nobody's really talked about with respect to housing. The legislature's done a lot to pass bills to really set the table of how we can really meet this moment with respect to housing demand. But we're dealing with also just the cost, basic cost of materials and supplies. You know, we've had this arbitrary tariff policy from this Trump administration that still has prices quite high. And will California need to be entering into the arena of where we may have to assist with, you know, just mass procurement of building supplies. Hmm.
California has devoted an unprecedented number of funding to solve housing and homelessness.
Yes.
But the needle hasn't really moved to a point where I think a lot of Californians feel that there's been significant and tangible progress. The issues that you laid out, they're brought up time and time again from one race to the next. What isn't being done?
I think there needs to be greater accountability of what we do with our dollars. You know, $24 billion spent on homelessness and along the continuum of just looking at, you know, housing as well. I think HUD actually has it right. When you think about the housing continuum, it is to be sure that people are housed. If they become homeless, we're going to try to get them rehoused as quickly as possible with interim supportive housing, stabilizing their situation to then go into more permanent supportive housing so that they have the services they need to and the support they need to then be able to get into a stable rental situation. And I will also say the even the possibility of home ownership, all kinds of innovations about how we can help people with down payment. But before we even get there, you know, how can we just look at each of these stages of this continuum and hold ourselves accountable for the outcomes related to that? And it is such, and housing, and why it's prioritized, and no surprise, it's the determinant of so much, right? To the extent that families become unhoused, you know, what it means for our children and our learners, how it affects their, you know, cognitive learning without being in a stable environment. Looking at some of the, it could be a determinant with respect to health and mental health. And so you look at this as just being so foundational, and yet at the same time, I don't think we've looked at it in terms of just how do we solve this to where we're providing security at every point of this continuum so that people can actually hopefully be in a home ownership situation.
California's budget challenges are, they exist, and the state has some pretty dramatic budget swings from these record surpluses in the days of the pandemic, you know, with one-time funding, to now facing a deficit. Yes. And that projection is expected to continue in future budget cycles. You were the state's chief fiscal officer during the pandemic when we had these record surplus. At that time, were you able to see, you know, how the state was prioritizing its spending, and could see, was there any foreshadowing that we would be in this difficult budget situation today?
You know, what I really surmised during that time, Vicki, is we were in an emergency situation. So I understand that when we had surpluses during that time, that we would deploy our resources fairly quickly to keep Californians healthy and safe. I think we could have done a better job with respect to looking at how we modernize existing programs so that coming out of the pandemic, we have those programs in place, not necessarily standing up new bureaucracies or new entities, but really modernizing them because, excuse me, we have the talent in state government. This is what professionals do all the time, from administration to administration, from economies to economies. And we didn't do that. We also looked at the one-time COVID relief as something that was going to probably be there longer than we thought it would be. And so that always is a trigger for me that, you know, relief is not a permanent solution. And so so what we have today is, you know, a period of the last number of years where we've spent more than we've brought in. And I think for me, it is really about how do we have a discipline where we can have just a always looking at what we have to work with to begin with, instead of always you know, trying to create the next new, you know, attractive program. So that is something that I think is part of accountability. And then the other thing I will say about what happened during the pandemic is, so many people were affected by the pandemic in terms that were part of the support system. So childcare, essentially, you know, just pretty much became non-existent, and we're basically trying to rebuild the system again. And so I think we have to prioritize, you know, those kinds of things in terms of how the economy can become stabilized again going forward. So I hope there is a priority around that. And then just two other things I will say. We had an opportunity to make investments with our surpluses to look at how we strengthen our public health infrastructure, knowing that this probably is not going to be the last pandemic that we have, particularly with climate change and the impacts of climate change. And where we could have done that with an economic impact. So we knew where the high concentrations of COVID cases were, people living with chronic health conditions, places where they didn't have access to health care. You know, those types of things that could have been a good investment for these communities to actually be on a better economic footing.
Hmm. Health care is a big passion of yours, a top issue for you. So the state's Medi-Cal expansion, it's been paused due to these budget constraints. And you talk about working within your means, but you also want healthcare to be accessible to Californians as well. I mean, do you believe in healthcare for all in California? And if so, how would you fiscally achieve this?
Sure. I do believe in healthcare for all. and I think with the magnitude of the cuts that we are facing, Vicki, from the federal government, we're going to have to raise revenue, the magnitude of which I think is still in question. What I would like to see, hopefully, is this is an opportunity to bring out the inefficiencies of the healthcare system. And I think the way that we bring down healthcare costs is how we close the access gaps. And so my view about what we need to do is look at where we have the most daunting challenges with respect to access, either geographically, culturally, you know, demographically. and really begin to lean in on how we grow their healthcare workforce right in those communities. So it becomes an economic benefit, but also looking at access being, you know, much more in closer proximity to the need. Otherwise, we're all looking at, we should never think about the emergency room as kind of the primary, you know, access point. But this way, we have the ability to, you know, finally, hopefully, be able to provide culturally competent care and look at, you know, how we can provide services in language. And the needs are different. There are going to be parts of California where we cannot stand up a full-scale, full-service hospital, but there are ways to be able to provide services. I was recently up in the Sonoma-Mendocino county lines. They call that, Mendonoma. And the healthcare that's provided there is through a mobile healthcare clinic. They have teams of healthcare professionals, and it's quite effective. People like the service they're getting, but they're not reimbursed in the same way as a hospital. And so, you know, we can do something about, you know, just some of those economic incentives about how we deliver services.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with former state controller Betty Yee. She is one of the Democratic candidates running to be California's next governor. Okay, so this race in particular is pretty unusual in that there's just a large field of candidates, 10 in total, 8 of them are Democrats, including yourself, of course. There are growing concerns that the Democratic vote could be diluted in the primary, possibly leading to 2 Republican candidates advancing to the general election in November. How serious of a possibility do you think that is?
I personally don't think that's a serious possibility. We are here in California. We had Democrats had a huge victory with Prop 50 in November. The organizing and mobilization is already beginning with respect to winning the House seats that were part of the Prop 50 plan, redistricting plan. So that work is already underway. But I will say that, you know, we have 2 fairly prominent Republicans who are running, one just endorsed this week by the president. And but here in California, our values do not, they are not aligned with our values here in California. I don't think that is a threat. I think from my perspective, it was fabricated in part just to try to narrow the field. And I think those who are polling in single digits, such as myself, are getting lots of communication about dropping out of the race. And Vicky, I'll just say, from the very beginning of this race, it's been a lot of starts and stops because there was speculation about all different kinds of people jumping into the race, all the way from our former Vice President Kamala Harris to, you know, our U.S. Senator Alex Padilla, the Attorney General, our current Attorney General. So, as a campaign, we've been just assessing, you know, our viability all the way along. And so, I'll say this, my pollsters have been polling gubernatorial races for the last 50 cycles. I've never seen anything like this from the perspective of how voters are not focused on this race yet. We still have about 25% of the electorate undecided. Those who are picking a candidate are still shopping for a candidate. They don't really know that much about the candidate. And so from that perspective, I think for me, my job is just to continue to make my case. And by the time ballots hit the early part of May, I think the question that most voters ask themselves when they have the ballot in hand is, who's going to represent my interests and concerns the best?
Given that California is overwhelmingly a blue state, do you think there's a deeper systemic problem within the California Democratic Party? You were a former vice chair of the California Democratic Party. I mean, the fact that voters are kind of checked out on this race.
Well, I think the problem is this. I get it. Look, people are just feeling so much anxiety and frankly fear about what's going to happen. We talked about, you know, just the economics and how, you know, we're a large global economy, but people aren't feeling it. And this is what people are concerned about. I mean, everything from how are we going to afford gas in our car to get to work to, you know, is my kid's school going to be okay? Am I going to lose my health care next month? So these are real concerns of Californians that's taking up a lot of their attention. And so a governor's race is probably the last thing on their mind at this point. So I think within the Democratic Party, I think we have to understand and recognize that this is what is on people's minds right now in terms of how we engage voters. I've been doing a lot of listening, and many of the conversations I've had around the state is, if we actually had to reimagine healthcare here in this region, what would it need to look like? And really getting, you know, some insights there. But this is what people are dealing with. And I hope that as candidates, and certainly I'm very mindful of this, what we have to solve to is just not only what we talked about with respect to affordability and healthcare and all of that, but it's really giving people a sense that we have a long-term vision about how they can be included in the state.
You know, finally, we're about 7 weeks to the primary.
Yes.
It's going to be here before we know it, whether we want it or not. Is there a scenario where you would suspend your campaign or withdraw from the race?
You know, I know that Chairman Hicks with the California Democratic Party has asked us to look at different points of assessing our viability. As I said, I do this almost on a regular basis. And you nailed it on the head, Vicky. This cycle has been like no other. I mean, we've seen the influence of these, you know, prediction markets in terms of just people buying and trading shares about, you know, the outcome of this race. We're seeing just a lot going on social media, a lot of information, a lot of misinformation, frankly. So we look at all of this. We look at all of this to see, okay, with the time that we have, the money that we're raising, just what is our viability? Right now, I would say we're still in it, but we're constantly, checking on it because, you know, it's the right thing to do. And then last thing I'll say, I'm not so fearful about two Republicans making it to the top two, but I am fearful about the influence of the billionaire class here in California and the growing influence of it. They have controlled Washington, D.C., and they're looking to control California. Look, I'm running against a billionaire. I'm running against billionaire-backed candidates. And this is where this particular community wants to be more influential in politics at all levels of government here in California. I'm more concerned about that in terms of drowning out the voices of everyday Californians.
Former Controller Yee, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, Vicky.
That was my interview with former state controller and Democratic candidate for governor, Betty Yee, recorded Friday morning. We'll be airing our conversations with gubernatorial candidates here on Insight, and you can find them on our website at capradio.org. Still ahead, stories about terrible jobs. We all probably have at least one. We'll meet two of this month's featured In a Nutshell performers. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.